The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. While driving in here to join you this afternoon, I was just thinking about the Dave Ramsey Show. Of course, I'm a big fan. You all know that. Fortunately, to follow that foundational program is teaching such wonderful basic skills of how to handle money. And the more young folks that can listen to that program, the better. And us, too, as well. But he works in the front end of the conveyor belt, time in your life when you need to learn those things. And then if you do them well, what you'll learn there, you will be able to invest a lot. And then that's where we come in, you know. The financial planning is really an important part of my world. And I thought today would be one of those days where I would share my week with you a little bit. The markets were pretty benign today, up slightly, down slightly, nothing to really share there. But financial planning is important to most of us. The folks I run into that don't need it too much are folks that have a lot of guaranteed benefits, and there's less and less of you in that group, you know, as we move forward as a society. That's because less and less pensions are available. So if you know what your income is going to be all guaranteed at retirement, there's not nearly as much planning needed. If you have no pension benefit, maybe some Social Security, there's a lot more calculations. There's a lot more questions to ask. You know, how will you fill the gap possibly if there is a gap there. So planning is important, and we do a lot of that. We are certified financial planner professionals, practitioners. All of the hosts of the program are. Nathan is soon to be on Wednesday evenings. He's our financial historian. Tune in on Wednesdays to enjoy my son, Nathan, who's a recent addition, the most recent addition to the program. Tuesday night, always a great show. Don and his daughter, Donna Grace, father and daughter on Tuesday night and father and son on Wednesdays. Show is here every evening at 5 p.m. 437-5000. Check out podcasts at 790business.com. Planning. What kind of triggered it was just a very interesting and nice week that I had. And also some reading that I did prior to get ready for the program. And in the Financial Advisor magazine type nerd magazine I read, you know, just an article there about people, sudden trend about people working after retirement to try to ease the burden of things, you know. Some do it by choice. And some do it by need, and some do it by a hybrid of that. But what I wanted to share with you is that if you've had financial plans done and the financial planners have told you that you're really not in good shape or, you know, the outcome wasn't that good, well, if retirement is from your primary job that you worked your whole life, consider asking your financial planner person to plug in to the math in your plan that when you retire from your full-time job, that you make some number per month, $1,000 a month, $500 a month of income, you know, but with part-time work, and just see what it looks like. You know, if you make $1,000 a month for 5 years and after you retire, that's $60,000, people. It takes a tremendous burden off your IRAs and things of that nature. So a lot of people don't realize that the software today is available and simple. Where we, people like me, can, and people like you too, if you're savvy at those things, can illustrate this, you know. So all of a sudden, a financial plan looks like, oh, you'll run out of money at 75 years old. That's too young. But if you worked part-time for 5 years, it lasts till 86. And 86 is past expectancy. That's not too bad. We try to go to 90. We like to see people's assets lasting till 90. Most folks that do financial planning that I've encountered anyway, we preserve the primary residence, meaning we never use it up in the plan in retirement. It's designed to be left behind as an estate asset to the children. And usually their savings as well. So we block those out in our software so that when the calculations are being done, we've told the computer that the value of the home, primary residence, and the value of the savings is not available to fund monthly withdrawals or anything like that. And so it can be done in a rather sophisticated way, but simple as well. There are some... you can get a rainbow of effects. You'll never meet anybody who approaches it more simply than me, but that's just my style. I think you can get a very good handle on where you are in retirement with three pages. I did one this morning, and I think it was very effective for the individual. I hope so. And we'll tweak it and twist it around. If you have a financial plan done for your retirement, is what it primarily is for. Now, if you're younger, in your 30s or 40s, your financial plan may include college planning for your children. What will it cost to send my two children, you know, to URI when they're of that age? And, you know, the software will project out the cost. Now, the software knows, hopefully, and I'm sure it does, that the cost of education and health care go up faster, seemingly, than anything else. So if we're figuring on 4% inflation in general in planning, I think you have to figure 6%. And now you have to make 8%, almost a break even. Very difficult. The good news is if you use a 529 plan, it'll all be tax-free. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business. Friday afternoon, wrapping things up on the week here. Our numbers here are 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. And podcasts available again at 790business.com. During the program tonight, we're going to talk about Dave Ramsey again because I want to encourage those of you who are listening are more likely to be closer to my age. I'm 58, and I think his group is a little bit younger. And so if you can encourage somebody young that you know to listen to that program, I think it could be one of the best things you could ever do for them, really. I had two parents that were very good at that stuff, and I seem to have been born with some natural skills there. And so I had a pretty good handle on that pretty young in life, the discipline of it. I was always afraid of debt. Absolutely. Ask my son Nathan. My father, the top financial advisor, terrified, absolutely terrified of debt. And I think that's being a little silly to make my point here, obviously, but when you're young, you must borrow to buy a home, and Nathan's done that, and hopefully not to buy cars if you can help it. And after that, don't borrow for anything else if you can help it. Maybe some education, but even that's a tough one today. Financing things adds to the cost, and things are expensive enough as they are, right, without adding interest to it. So another week wrapping things up. The market has been pretty benign for a while. You've heard me speak of this phenomenon called a sweet spot. It usually ends right around March. So let's take a look. It's actually up since then a little bit, but usually you don't get a lot more gain in values in the U.S. stocks from like March through October. That 6 months is called the summer doldrums by some folks, and we call the other part of it the sweet spot. Those of you that may have played tennis or racquetball, you know the racquet has a sweet spot. It's right in the center, and it's the strings are tighter there, and you get more action, a faster rebound with the ball if you hit it in the sweet spot. Well, the stock market has a sweet spot. It seems to be, and it doesn't work this way every year, but it seems to work this way a good majority of the time, way over half of the time. I think the math last time we looked at it was about 80%. You don't get much. You get all the gains October, November, December, January, February, March. So if you want to be an investor for the first time, you don't know when to begin. Save, and start getting serious around August. I think it's dangerous that if you leave the money around, you might spend it. So knowing human nature, my planner side of me would say that doesn't work, because if it builds up, they might do something else with it. Yeah, if you've got it, get it in there, put it in your portfolio, you know, buy some shares or something and become an investor. You can do it online today. There are so many wonderful companies out there, Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, BlackRock. It's not easy, to do it well and succeed at investing on your own, but it's easy mechanically, and it's surely not expensive any longer, and I'm all for that. You know, I mean, if you want to buy 10 shares of something, you don't need to pay me anything. I'm an advisor. I'm an idea guy. If you don't need an idea from me, then you should pay $9 to get that done. You should not have to pay some hotshot, because they make a lot of money doing something else that's way more sophisticated. You know, putting an order in, I don't think a person who just puts an order in for you, okay, buy those shares, should earn $200,000 a year. That seems kind of silly in today's world, you know. But there was a time when that was the only way it could be done. So if you had a grandfather that was a broker and did that, please don't be offended. But in today's world, no one no one does that, and no one's making a living really trading stocks in general. There are probably some still doing that, but it seems to be a smaller and smaller crowd. I will say it's very difficult. If you can manage a portfolio of individual stocks and create enough diversification, the problem is you have to own so many different ones and then follow so many different ones. It's very difficult. And those professionals out there who do it that way are highly skilled. And sometimes if that's what you think is appropriate for you, then you need to seek out someone like that. And they're pretty hard to find because, again, it does take probably the largest set of skills than any other method. Most of the folks I run into would not like that because they would get a statement in the mail that was 41 pages long every quarter, and they don't want to look at 296 stocks. They're overwhelmed. They have an ADD meltdown. I would. I'm ADD. Yeah, no kidding, Steve, right? But so we prefer to use these modern ETFs. Traditional well-run mutual funds are still good. We haven't excluded those. But keep the cost very, very low by using these new modern products, and you really can accomplish quite a bit. And don't miss out on your 401k plan out there, you younger people. If you have a 401k plan available to you, please don't be mistaken. Any money you put in one of these plans, if you leave that job, you get to take every dime of your money that you put in with you. I've heard many young people say, no, I'm not doing that because I'm not sticking around. Like I'm the one that doesn't get it. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, I'll lose the money. No, you won't. No, you won't. You get every dollar. That law changed 10, 15 years ago. And they have to give you every dollar you put in has to be vested. That's a law. And now you may have company contribution matching that they will vest. And that means if you leave quickly, you might only get a portion of it. But you will always, no matter what plan you're in, there's no exception to this, get your money that you put in voluntarily, right? And that's a good law. That's the kind of regulation we want to see our government do, get involved and make sure that those type of things are in place so that the mighty dollars can't squash the small dollars. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business, and we'll be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. Thank you for that entry. L.A. Woman by The Doors, one of my favorites. Year-to-date, guess what? The emerging markets are emerging. U.S. Dow Jones up about 6%, 7% year-to-date. Emerging markets fund up 15%. That's quite a bit more. It's the same thing that happened the last time rates rose in the U.S. Now, it doesn't always work that way, but it looks like it's working that way again. History doesn't always repeat itself, but it's often similar is the word. And it's similar again, so if you don't have emerging markets in your portfolio, please take a look at that part of the world. I will share with you, last year, I was yapping about this all year. I was pretty sure of myself, as hopefully you can be right on these things. And no one over time will be right on all of your judgments. But it seemed kind of obvious to me that the emerging markets had performed badly for so long. Why would that be? You know, we had falling interest rates in the greatest economy on earth, the U.S. economy, for like 12, 15 years straight. Bond market had the best 10 years ever. Stocks did well during the initial part of that, not in the tail part of it. There was no reason to look at emerging markets. They weren't as reliable. They were more risk. And so anyone that I shared that with last year, even a lot of other professionals that I know, all had the same response. Oh, Steve, have you looked at the performance of those things, how bad they've been? I said, of course I have. I wouldn't open my mouth about it, you silly man. I said to one guy, you think who I am, I'm not going to look at that first before I open my mouth about it. Come on. Now, yes, I agree. They've been horrible, and we haven't owned them until now. And so I wasn't telling anyone last year to own them the last 10 years. I was telling everyone last year to own them now. Okay, and so these things flip, you know, and it seems to me interest rate cycles has a lot to do with it. I also believe, you know, if you're not really young like me and you've been fortunate enough to save up some money for your retirement and stuff, I think you have to have a global footprint. To the extent I believe in it so much that if I had a client say to me, I don't want anything outside the U.S., I would be very uncomfortable. There would have to be somebody special that I really liked a lot for me to do that. Otherwise, I would probably say, you know, you got to find someone else probably to do that one. I think it's a real big mistake to not do that. And what's really interesting is a lot of the ETFs today, you can get them in a global flair if you like. So you can have an ETF that invests in utilities, U.S. utilities, or you can have one that's global. And global is usually going to be about half U.S. and half the rest of the world. It doesn't cover every area. Usually those broad funds aren't going to go near emerging markets. They're too kooky. Everyone's afraid of them. I'm afraid of them too a bit, but when they were down for so much for so long, I just felt that there was good value there. The one that I like at the moment, anyway, is DVYE. It has a dividend of about 5%. Yet if you put it into your super duper Yahoo Finance or something, it's going to give you all kinds of other dividend answers. They're wrong. It's about 5.25. It's just that what happens is these little software programs we all use takes the last dividend. And says, oh, the fund pays dividends quarterly. The last dividend quarterly was X amount times 4, back divide into the principal, and there's your yield. But this fund has a very inconsistent dividend quarter to quarter, so you can't do it that way. So anyway, 4 or 5%. Fascinating category. You know, emerging markets are considered aggressive, right, and higher risk. This particular ETF, DVYE, with a nice dividend, why would it have a dividend like that? That's odd, you know? Really aggressive funds and holdings don't have big dividends like that. You know, 5.25% dividend is very chunky right now. Why would that be? Well, it's because it invests in only conservative things, staple investments, food companies, utilities, gas, natural gas, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Staple stuff that we all need to have, but it's in, foreign lands, probably about 10 to 12 different countries, quite a good piece in Asia. The word emerging is tough. You know, at one point is a country no longer emerging if it's been being called emerging for 35 years. So at some point it's emerged, I guess. There are smaller markets than emerging and more aggressive, if you like. if you're really young, it's fine. It's called frontier funds. And frontier funds invest in really crazy stuff. And these are the funds that will either thrill you, or disappoint you badly. So they're the ones when you see last year the fund was down 78%, that's when you buy it, silly man. You don't buy it when it was up 78% last year. A little quick story. Many moons ago, 10 years ago or so, had someone come into the office and was asking, or called a show, I can't recall which it was, about a new mutual fund that came out, and it invested all in Russian companies. It was called a Stroika Russia Fund is what I remember of. This could go back 15 years here, probably, or more, you know. And when I asked the client, what about it is, do you find appealing? That's pretty aggressive stuff, you know. Do you understand you're talking about something's very risky in general, I think. She said, well, look at what the return was last year, and it made 91% the previous year. And she wanted to make an investment in it, and I did everything I could to talk her out of it, and I was able to do that, and she did something else. 1 year later, you know what the return was of that fund? That was up 90%, minus 75. And that's the nature of the beast, you know. I mean, investments, as I've shared with you all before, are a lot like people, in that we all have personalities. I'm a little wound up. Don's more laid back than I am by his nature. So is Nathan, you know. And so you can expect certain things from, you know, if you need somebody to have the ultimate energy till the last minute, that's going to be me. If you need someone to calm things down, that's going to be, you know, Don or Nathan. And investments are very similar. You know, some are very, this is why I love charts. If you look at before you make an investment, look at a chart of the value over a 10, 15, 20-year period. It will give you an idea of the personality of the character you're getting involved with. You know, what if you see a chart that looks like a zipper, just up and down, crazy swings, up and down, up and down? Is that what you want? Maybe going into it, you were thinking, no, I'd like something consistent that I can relax with. Well, then that's not the right one for you. But if you see a chart of a stock or an investment that shows pretty consistently going up, once in a while pulls back a bit, you know, but that's going to have, generally speaking, a little bit lower return over the long run, but more suitable to your style. Investments that are not suitable to you, you'll usually handle incorrectly. I mean, even if you have a financial professional like myself, you can still call me up and tell me to sell everything when you're panicky. I mean, my job and my obligation as a fiduciary is to convince you that's not the best thing to do. But if you insist, you know, your name's on the account, I have to do what you tell me to do. So the danger is always there for the individual to rely on their non-professional understanding of things and make a panic move. Talk a little bit more about it when we come back from a break. I've met a few people along the journey who lost half their money and actually lost the money. Now, I had declines of that size but got every penny back, never lost the dollars. And I've actually met people who lost half the principal twice in their 401k plan, and we're going to talk about how can that happen when we get back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. It's hot in here. If anyone's listening, it's always hot in here. It's like, I mean, like 80. Yeah, I'm not the only one that brings it up, I'm sure. All right. Growth stocks in Europe are outperforming value stocks. That's usually what happens when interest rates are rising. That inversion occurred in the beginning of May and was sort of looking for that. It's, usually growth stocks will do well because things that pay dividends are compared to the interest rate more than things that don't pay dividends. So there's more of a connection point there. Growth stocks are really for the young folks. You have a dose of it if you're middle-aged, even up to my age possibly. Not a big fan of them as we get older. I'm a real dividend fan like Warren Buffett. You can invest in international ETFs today and get 2% in dividends if that will please you. How about preferred stocks at 6%? U.S. stocks, Spider, 2%. Short-term bonds, grandma stuff, real safe, 3%. Floating rate bonds, a little different animal, 4%. These are dividends that you can take as income, folks. 3, 4, 5, 6%. High yield bonds at 7%. We have a closed-end fund for that one. Utilities has a nickname over the years. That was, mom-and-pop stocks. Because they, of all the stocks, they're the most conservative and they pay nice income, assuming that, you know, folks that are nearing retirement or in retirement either need income at that point or they just like to see it, you know. My personal portfolio is designed to achieve 6% return with as little risk as possible over time, and to do that, get there by 3% of it in dividend. So I'm always going to have my personal portfolio and clients that like the idea will always have at least a 3% dividend in the, no matter what. And right now, considering, you know, in traditional fixed income, it, you know, it's half of 1%, that sort of stuff. And how do you do that? You do that by some a little more aggressive holdings, clearly. It's never been more difficult to achieve yield in the investment world because interest rates, and that's what controls yields, are the lowest they've ever been. The good news is, if you're an income investor like me, you're only going to get raises going forward. Your dividends on your holdings are going to go up. Unless you have locked-in bonds, like 20- and 30-year bonds, but you should have them flushed out of your retail portfolio by now. They are a traditional holding always in pensions because that money, or endowments, because that's 100-year money. You know, so the 30-year bond is okay there. But it's a danger in your own account. If interest rates were to rise very sharply, something you think is very safe can be a great risk. One of the more common questions I've gotten in from clients in review meetings over the last, say, 2 or 3, even going back to 3 years, was about this risk of rising interest rates, and I was happy to tell them that that was already taken care of, and the bonds that are at great risk during a time like that have been removed from your account long ago. And the only holdings, pretty much, for me, in the bond area are short-duration bonds at 3% dividend, and floating rate bonds at 4%. So, you know, 3.5 average, that's really the portfolio goal for the bond department. For now, I think in 2 years from now, the goal will be 4, and then 5 maybe someday. Wouldn't it be nice to get 6% pure off your portfolio, all in dividend? It'll happen again someday. I know it's hard to imagine. Those of you that, like I, have been around long enough to remember when rates were higher, we'll get there someday. Who knows how high they'll get? But there's a lot of room for them to go up. Now, rising interest rates is good for who? people that are retired. They want to get a good high return on their money without taking risk, and that's what they need, high interest rates. What's high interest rates bad for? Young people. Young people are taking out loans, buying houses, taking out, locking in mortgages for 20 and 30 years, right? So we want that to be as low as possible, and we're still there. So if you haven't bought some real estate yet, if you've been holding off, if you've got the money and you're ready to go, I say go. I say go. Long term, I don't believe we're in any kind of a bubble. I think we have had a recovery in prices. That's not the same thing as a ridiculous, you know, inappropriate stretching of the rubber in the balloon before it bursts. Studying charts helps you see that one really clearly. What just happened in the last 6 months when that sector took off? Oh, is it a surge to something new? No, just a recovery from a previous bad period. You have to understand the difference, because each one of those two situations will have a different following event in the marketplace. This is the Money Talk Show on 790 AM. Our numbers here are 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. We are also podcasts available at 790business.com. The people that told me they lost half their money twice, I'm going to cry just thinking about it. I mean, I went through that period with them, and a lot of you did too, but never thought for a moment of panicking and selling everything and putting it all in cash when it was down half in value. And that's what I've met people that did it twice. And I said to them once, I said to them, you know what the answer to that is? They said, what? I said, let me handle it. Now, you'll still be in charge and you'll still be able to pull the trigger, but you're going to have to deal with me first. And I'm pretty good at slowing you down if you're about to make a big mistake with your money. That's part of my responsibility as an advisor. If somebody's to help them, guide them to good decisions, right, in a positive manner, normally, hopefully in a positive frame of mind. But what if somebody's just panicked and really behaving in a way that I believe is not in their best interest? Well, my job is to tell them that, at least slow them down long enough to tell them that. And in the end, of course, even when you have a fiduciary, you're the boss and you can terminate things usually within 30 days. Or I would, of course, take instructions from my clients if they were that worried. Almost never happens. Talk about it all up front. That's the reason for having a professional for most people, is that emotion can be pulled away to some extent when it's what you do for a living every day, 8 hours a day. When it's just your money, very difficult to be unattached to it, right? Makes sense? You know, that's part of it. Finding the right people that you match up well with is the most important thing. You can visit the Financial Planning Association here in Rhode Island and find someone that's local near you. Get out and meet two or three people. See what their philosophies are. Look at it like an education. Every one of us owes you a 20-minute or half-hour discussion for free if you're willing to talk to us. I don't care who it is. I do it. I'm very experienced, and I don't charge ever, still don't, for the first consultation. I'm flattered. If somebody wants to speak with me, I'd be happy to speak with them in a general manner. Can't solve all their problems. only in the beginning. The folks that had those terrible losses, they didn't understand what they had. They wasn't diversified well enough. It was too aggressive. The variety of reasons of how that happens. And to help alleviate that, I have a chart. I've always kept a chart on my wall that's like goes back 70 years in the stock market, and Nathan just put up a nice, beautiful new one. But it's long term. It's 30, 40, 50 years, and it's important to me that it's that long, because what I show clients is, you see these previous times the stock market went down, and I show them on the chart where it's down at the bottom. Every time it was at the bottom, I did this today, every time, 12 times in a row, going back 70 years, somewhere in the major media, you heard the following comment. It's different this time. It's not going to come back up. It's different this time. I want to find out where those people are right now, and I think they should be held liable for those person's losses, because the U.S. stock market, the last 12 times it's corrected in the last 80 years, has an infallible record, 12-0. Every time the U.S. stock market has been down in the past, that is not a guarantee of the future, I agree, but 12-0? You can't be comfortable with that? I don't get that. I don't get that. I'm a math guy, you know? This is why, if the stock market is down low, I will buy more of it. I will move some money from the bond department over and visit, have a glass of wine with the stock guys over there. And when the prices are low and you're panicky and you want to maybe sell things. Now, if you're reacting that way, it probably means you've got too much risk. This week, I had a meeting with a couple close to, in their 70s now, withdrawing 3 or 4% of their money out of their account. Accounts conservatively invested, which means probably no more than 25% stocks. And that's about what it produces, 3 to 4%. So if they take that as income, they'll always have their principal. But do you, at what age do you change your risk levels? This is always a very deep conversation. You know, I've had and still do have clients that are in their 80s who are as able to handle the risk of things as anybody else is. No different. If Mary's listening, she's one of my favorites. She knows who she is. She's a very experienced investor, and she has nothing to do with her age. She doesn't have to go have, you know, only boring stuff that makes no money because she's 82 years old. Now, on the other hand, some folks look at that a little bit differently. Some people enjoy it. The person I'm referring to, her first name only, enjoys the conversation with me about what's Exxon doing and what do we think about that, you know, in a review meeting. And she's in her 80s, and she's just an investing gal. Some people just have the right head for this, you know, and some people don't. And if you don't, be careful, because it's dangerous if you have the right head for it. It's surely dangerous if you don't. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. Check out some podcasts of our history night, which is Wednesdays. Beta is a measure of risk in your account. My personal money account has a beta of about 0.5 to 0.6 usually, which means half the risk of the stock market. I am at 58. I don't want any more than that. No more than that in my stew. Half the risk. How much risk do I recommend for my son Nathan, who sits right next to me in my office? Double that. He's 33, right? Depends who you are. Now, what if you're my age, but you're behind. You don't feel like you saved enough. Well, maybe you can tweak the risk up a little bit. But I don't think you should ever invest like a young guy, unless you're a young guy or a young gal. You know, you can have a touch of it there if you're trying to play catch up. But playing catch up and going too risky can run you off the rails in the other department, and that could be equally or worse than you know, having to work a little longer. Financial planning is like an algebra formula. Those of you, I had the thrill, of course, me being who I am. I enjoyed meeting this week and working with a gentleman who was a math major, math whiz. And beta is just a measure of risk, and all of you should ask whoever's handling accounts for you. Not I don't mean guaranteed accounts. I mean accounts that are investments. You know, what's the beta of this portfolio or that fund that I have? Beta means a measure of risk against the S&P 500. So, for example, my own personal account is about a beta of 0.6, which means I have 40% less risk than the stock market, because I think the stock market is not low. I know that. Okay, I think it's pretty pricey, so I want the beta to be around half. Now, if the stock market drops 40% tomorrow, I'll want that beta to be higher than that, and I will raise it by, again, the bond department will give up a few members, and they'll move across the hallway and go work in the stock department for a year or two. And that's called rebalancing. It can be done by mechanical means today through robo-computers and things of that nature. It's one of the many tasks that professionals do when managing accounts: rebalancing, replacing, reevaluating, reviewing. These are all the things that you should be getting for what you're paying for your money, and I'm sure you are. A lot of changes going on in the financial biz right now. If you've been working with a person who had an IRA account that was on a commission type basis, nothing wrong with that. Almost always nothing wrong with that. The industry is trying to get away from that, so that all advisors are on the same page and that there's no potential for anyone to be selfish and recommend what's best for themselves versus what's best for the client. If you yourself are a commission person, that's no attack on you. And if you're working with one of those folks, that's no measure of them whatsoever. Good people do the right thing no matter how they're paid. So find the right people, and it doesn't really matter, I always said. You know, there's a lot of ways of doing it. But the industry is moving away from commissions for retirement accounts. And I'm going to share how much time do we have left, boss? Well, a minute? Okay. Here's the biggest problem with commissions. You never heard this argument before. You go into an investment company, right, and I'm allowed to earn all the commission, big fat commission up front on your account. Instead of getting paid a little fee over time, get a big, big commission up front. That's how commissions are. It's all front-loaded, right? You go back for service a year later, and I quit. It didn't work out for me. I'm picking core hogs now. The next person who steps up in line looks at your account and says, I didn't make anything on that. And you as a retail customer have a very hard time getting service. These people end up in my office saying, what happened here? when the person that sold me the product left, no one else seemed very interested at all, unless they could convince me to sell it and buy something else, because that's what's called a transactional business. Most folks in the financial business are ethical, and they're trained that way, and they know how to handle all that. But unfortunately, like all businesses, you know, 2% or so of human beings in any group are going to take advantage of you if they can figure out how to do it. And we in the financial biz are trying to create a system for you all so that it can't ever happen, ever, to anyone. Is it perfect? No. More on that next week. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business, and I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. This is your station for talking business. If you have an idea you'd like us to cover, let us know somehow. We'd be happy to accommodate you. We try to just share what we do during the day. Don always said, you're our last client of the day, our last meeting, coming in here and talking to all of you. And it's been that way for about 25 years now. I remember when we started doing this, there was a young fellow I knew who I liked a lot, and I had suggested that he kind of get involved with us in doing this. And he looked me right in the eye. I'll never forget. This is 26 years ago. He said to me, "Do you have any idea what that radio show is going to require of you?" And I smiled ear to ear and said, "Yeah, I do." He didn't get it. You know, he didn't get it. And I did. And I thought it would be a wonderful kind of a healthy pressure, you know, to stay on top of things and just not let it get around you, you know. Sort of like having a trainer, I guess, for physical fitness, you know. It's another element of discipline in your life that helps to, it'll help to guide some other things. Discipline is the reason the character in my story tonight lost half their money twice investing in their 401k plan. That should never happen. If that's how you feel about those things and those things scare you that much, that's perfectly fine. Don't you feel bad about that? And if you have an advisor that makes you feel bad about that, you find another advisor. I have family members, people I love that are that way, that are very low risk. One of them probably listening right now. She and I talk about it all the time. I said, don't you ever feel bad about that. If that's how you feel, don't care what anybody else is doing. If it fits you and it fits your needs and you're comfortable, then that's the right thing for you to do. That's called suitability. What's suitable for you? You don't have to invest aggressively if you're 33, if you're completely not comfortable with it, because you know what will happen if you're not comfortable with it? You'll blow it. That's the person that sells out when it's down half and makes the mistakes and just gets killed. And I don't know how you make up for that. If you do that twice in your investing lifetime, you cannot get over that. You'll be in bad shape financially forever. So don't do it. Don't overinvest in high-risk stuff. Only put in a mix you're comfortable with. And if you're starting off and you don't have any experience, always start off easy at everything in life, right? Don used to say years ago, his grandmother said, hot soup, don't sip around the edges. Don't gulp it down. So don't dive in. And don't let anybody encourage you to dive in aggressively. Go easy, you know, go easy. Big mistakes can be made. Make sure you know who you're dealing with. And make sure you know how they get paid. If you're dealing with a financial person, and if you ask them how much do you make on this thing you're selling me, and it's okay question to ask, and you probably should ask it nicer than I just did, but there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you like a variable annuity for your IRA and it's $10,000 and the commission's 6% overall, what happened? That's okay. I wouldn't attack that, but I would not go for is a $500,000 annuity inside your IRA where the commission was $30,000. Because that does come out of you, no matter what anybody tells you. If not, obviously, it comes out of you some other way indirectly. So I think some of these products are okay with smaller dollar values. But as clients get older and their account values get larger, they are supposed to be able to get discounts, volume discounts, right? I don't think you get that in annuities. And you can get it in mutual funds that had loads years ago. But I don't think there's any of that in the annuity biz, although they're probably working on that right now. Where annuities going to go, I have no idea. Because by the end of this year, it's going to be against the law for anyone to sell you an annuity inside of an IRA account. So if you're someone suggesting you do that right now, I would, you know, give that a lot of thought. Why is that law going that direction? A good majority of people in my biz don't agree with that law. We all on this program happen to agree with it completely and voluntarily became fiduciaries 15 years ago. So what this law is about to say, we've been saying it for two decades, really, is what it comes down to. Does that mean that someone can't be a commissioned person in the financial business and do a great job? I've already covered that and said almost all of them did for years. It was always that rare individual that you find in the auto mechanic business, financial business. It's just a human thing. You're going to have a small percentage of people who will take advantage of anything that they can, if they can figure out how to do it. And the rest of us, fortunately, the majority, are driven by bigger things. Pride, family name, wanting to do the right thing. Very important to have people like you, right? I mean, so to get there, you have to do good things. And the majority would. But if we could have a system in our country, at least with your retirement money, where everybody in it has to get paid the same way, it takes away any incentive for anyone to do the wrong thing. And again, I'm not implying at all that anybody in particular does the wrong thing. I operated that way for many years myself and could do it tomorrow morning ethically without any problem at all. But as a sweeping across the industry thing, we happen to all agree here on this program anyway, the hosts and the co-hosts, that we think is what's probably best. Do those current rules, are they perfect? No. Do I have all the answers? No. But I do believe it's moving in the right direction anyway towards that. I was asked to repeat something I did last Friday, and it was I discussed this portfolio here that I like a lot. It's called a moderate growth. The goal of it long term is 6%, and dividends about 3.5% of that. It's about 9 to 10 of these modern ETFs. There's an individual stock in there as well. No need to go into details. Individual stocks have tax efficiency sometimes. I'm a little comfortable with real estate stocks because of the real estate behind it, the tangible asset behind it. And the one that I like has a nice dividend of 4 or 5%. But with just glancing at a portfolio, like I'm only looking at 10 different listings of what's in there. But if you break it down with this chart I have here, those 10 investments have many, many different investments inside them, you know. And as I mentioned before, most clients don't want to look at 367 different investments on their statement. They want to somehow, you need some method of condensing that down and making it manageable for them. And so I think this is one of the best ways of doing that. But anyway, this portfolio of 9 or 10 ETFs, the person asked me to repeat it was because they said they couldn't believe what they heard. It could be true. 3,782 different bonds are in those 9 funds and 1,817 individual stocks. So that's, what, 5,200 different holdings if you looked at them one at a time. But you only see 10 listings on your statement. So I think this is the way to handle the middle market myself. I think if you have fortune enough to have $30 million, then the old-fashioned way of all individual stocks, I think, is probably best because it's very cost-effective. It just takes so much research, and that takes away from some of that cost-effectiveness. Then it also depends on whether you believe in indexes or not, and I sort of do, so therefore that individual stock-picking thing, I'm not sure about that over the long run, how well that will do. You may have someone who has a record with you of doing better than that at it, and if that's the case, I say stick with it, you know. If it's not broke, don't fix it, and if it's working, try to stay with it. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. Have a good, safe weekend, and tune in, of course, Monday night at 5 p.m. for Don Sowell right here on AM 790, your station for talking business.
Of all of the people that I used to know, most never adjusted to the great big world. I see them lurking in bookstores, working for the public radio. Yeah, the babies around, the sack on their back.